Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I am a big supporter of not restricting internet use, internet access, other information technologies like Twitter. The more open we are, the more we can communicate, and it also helps to draw the world together.
That, of course, was President Obama from his town hall meeting in Shanghai on Monday, answering a question about the firewall for internet use in China. Ethan Zuckerman, a fellow of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard, focuses on technology and international development, and he's back with us this morning to focus on China and the internet in light of the president's visit. Ethan is our weekly guest for the month of November. He founded Geek Core, which pairs technology experts with businesses and emerging nations, and is the co-founder of the website Global Voices Online, a website that wants to bridge the gap of language and geography by translating blog posts from around the world. Ethan, welcome back to WNYC. Thanks again for doing this.
Always great to be here, Brent.
Can you contrast the reaction to President Obama's town hall meeting from the Chinese government with the reaction from Chinese bloggers and the rest of Chinese cyberspace as you are able to observe it?
Well, it's interesting. I think that there's a perception that Obama was being incredibly careful at that town hall meeting. Coming from the Chinese bloggers, I think the Western media that I've read basically suggested that he was pretty firm and that he was making a big and bold and brave statement. And I think the disagreement between those points of view, the idea that that mainstream media in the U.S. would be arguing that Obama and that quote that you just played was, sort of provoking the Chinese government versus what Chinese netizens are saying in Chinese, where a lot of their commentary is about being somewhat embarrassed that the question that got Obama talking about censorship didn't come from a Chinese citizen. It came from the U.S.'s ambassador to China.
So it was a setup. But what is that?
So the setup and a question about why that conversation wasn't coming out from one of these students in Shanghai. We talked last week about taking a look at the East, South, West, North blog. This is Roland Sung's wonderful project where he translates from Chinese media into English and vice versa. And near the top of the site today is a column from the Southern Metropolis Daily, the columns by Yi Fan. And Yi Fan is basically chewing out the students in Shanghai for not being brave enough to ask these sort of questions and essentially forcing this question to come from the Americans rather than from the Chinese.
Interesting. Though, isn't that just a reflection of the danger that a Chinese student could get themselves into by asking that kind of question?
Well, that's an interesting question. Why is it dangerous to ask that question in person, but evidently quite comfortable to ask that question online? It's interesting. We tend to think of the Chinese internet as being heavily censored and heavily controlled. We think in terms of the Great Firewall, the Golden Shield, all these technologies that we've talked about that allegedly control China's online space. What you're able to see from looking at some of Roland's translations is that there's actually quite a bit of conversation about free speech issues going on in Chinese on the Chinese internet.
And listeners, some of you will remember that your assignment for this week from Ethan Zuckerman from Global Voices Online and the Harvard Berkman Center was for you to go to the Chinese English bridge blog, ZonaEuropa.com, which you could search by going, was it east, west? What was the order of the directions?
It's east, south, west, north.
East, south, west, north. So if anybody has actually spent some time on Zona Europa or any other Chinese media, give us a call. What did you see in terms of a reaction to President Obama's visit or anything else that you may be reading? Weigh in on internet censorship there or, again, anything else. If you frequent Chinese language blogs because you're fluent in Chinese, because you do business there, you're an immigrant, children of immigrants, whatever, Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. Be our bridge bloggers, 212-433-9692, or post a comment at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Let me play a slightly longer clip from President Obama's answer to that same question about the internet firewall in China and raise some of the issues that this gets into.
I should tell you, I should be honest. As President of the United States, there are times where I wish information didn't flow so freely, because then I wouldn't have to listen to people criticizing me all the time. I think, you know, people naturally are, when they're in positions of power, sometimes thinks, oh, how could that person say that about me, or that's irresponsible, or... But the truth is that because in the United States information is free, and I have a lot of critics in the United States who can say all kinds of things about me, I actually think that that makes our democracy stronger, and it makes me a better leader, because it forces me to hear opinions that I don't want to hear.
President Obama in China. So open information makes democracy stronger. Well, back in the 1990s, Bill Clinton told leaders in Beijing that controlling speech online was like nailing Jell-O to the wall, that censoring the internet simply wouldn't work, and the internet would lead inexorably to China's democratization. But that was President Clinton, you know, way back then. So Ethan Zuckerman, after 10 years of hindsight, do you think that Clinton prediction about censorship online being like nailing Jell-O to the wall has actually come true?
It turns out that if you actually make the Jell-O concentrated enough, you can nail it to the wall just fine. You have to put a lot of extra gelatin in it. The Chinese have actually done an enormous amount of work creating an internet that had censorship on a whole bunch of different levels. We're used to thinking about the firewall aspect, the fact that from within China, it's impossible or at least quite difficult to get to certain websites. It's hard to get to a website like Human Rights Watch. And that's an important aspect of censorship, but it isn't the only one that goes on. And in fact, people have gotten very good about getting around that form of censorship. There's a lot of open proxies. There's tools like Tor that allow people to circumvent that firewall. Where a lot of Chinese censorship has focused lately is on censorship of publishing platforms. Lots of people within China use blogging platforms, video sharing platforms that are hosted within China. Good reasons for this. They're easier to get to because they're not blocked by that firewall. They're in Chinese rather than in English. They seem like a perfectly reasonable thing to use. My colleague Rebecca McKinnon did a very careful study of about 30 of these platforms, figured out that all of them engage in some form of censorship. They look at the content that's being published, and then based on their interpretation of local regulations, they take down some of that content. So what you've got going on in China, which really isn't happening many other places, you've got very thorough censorship of from the internet to the outside. You've got very thorough censorship within China. And you have crazy stuff going on, like censorship that looks for keywords. One of the things that we saw about a year ago on the Chinese internet was that people started talking about their blogs being censored. And then the word for censored became a trigger. If you use the word censored, your blog would get blocked.
Mm-hmm.
So people started using a colloquialism. They started saying that their blog had been harmonized. The blog had been removed in the interest of societal harmony. Then the word harmonized would get your blog blocked. So then people made a joke. The word for harmonize is very similar in pronunciation to the word for river crab. And so you would have Chinese bloggers suddenly talking about their blogs being river crabbed, which was a wonderfully strange phenomenon. But now river crab, you know, a common dish in restaurants, has now become slang for internet censorship. So there's amazing censorship. There's also amazing creativity that fights back against it. What I'm astounded by is that despite all these barriers, people have amazingly open conversations on these blogs. Again, going back to that East, South, West, North blog, there's this wonderful article in translation called Why Blog? And the author there, Yang Henjun, basically takes on that comment that you just played and says, look, no leader, including Obama, enjoys being criticized. And so no leader ever of his or her own volition leads to free speech. Free speech comes from a constitution. Free speech is a right that comes from the people, not from the ruler. And therefore, as Chinese, it's incumbent upon us to carve out a place of free speech, and that's why I blog.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Ethan Zuckerman from Global Voices Online and the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard. He's joining us once a week, all month, to look at what are called bridge blogs, blogs that translate between English and other languages to get a better sense of what's going on in cultures around the world by looking online. And we're taking phone calls from anybody who tries to use websites in the Chinese language, 212-433-WNYC. And here is Bennett in Johnsonburg, New Jersey. Bennett, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Let me give you my experience during this summer when I was in Jilin, which is in North China. It's in Manchuria. It was during the period that the Uyghurs were being put upon in West China. And what I experienced was a systematic shutdown of my email. It began with I could get my email, I could see the list, I could open it, and I could respond to it. Then one day, suddenly I couldn't respond. The next day, I could see the list, I couldn't open it. The third day, I could see the list, and I couldn't click on it. And then finally, no email came through. So it was as things got worse in the West, there was fewer and fewer opportunities for me to communicate.
Bennett, I'm curious, what sort of visa were you traveling on?
I'd been invited to a college to demonstrate and lecture.
And do you think they had their eye on you for some reason, or were you just running into a larger phenomenon?
Oh, I don't think they were running into me. They may, since it was through a school, they may have been watching the school for, I don't know, suspicious communications.
Ethan Zuckerman, does this sound like a common experience, or do you want to reflect on anything this raises for you?
Well, it's been a very common experience for Western China. Since the unrest in Xinjiang, there have been large parts of Western China that have been functionally cut off the internet and also cut off from long-distance telephone lines. And again, another thing that's very interesting is that it's almost impossible to talk about the Chinese internet as a whole. These blogs that I'm reading are generally from Shanghai, from Beijing, from Guangzhou. It would be really hard to be blogging from Western China right now because one of the responses to that unrest has been to shut down communication on a very, very large scale. So I think what's so interesting about this is depending on where you are, depending on what those local political circumstances are, the experience of being on the Chinese internet can be a completely different thing. But certainly in Western China, functionally, a huge amount of information has been cut off from that region, and there has been a great deal of attempt to control the narrative coming out of Western China.
Bennett, I have two words for you. River crab. Good luck. Thank you for calling and sharing your story. And it's not just the political stuff that gets blocked, Ethan, like you were just describing, and the censorship process in China. There's something that they call the cute cat theory. You know that?
Well, I started talking about the cute cat theory about 2 years ago.
Is that your coinage?
I'm afraid it probably is my coinage, and I ended up using it as a way to explain what was going on with censorship in some countries that are less sophisticated than China. And the example that I often use is Tunisia, which is a very repressive, very media-controlling country in North Africa. The Tunisian government has this tendency to cut off access to dailymotion.com, which is a very popular video sharing site. It's more popular in French-speaking countries than YouTube. And friends of mine put together a video that poked fun at the Tunisian First Lady. And as a result, the Tunisian government blocked access to dailymotion.com. Now, what's interesting about this is that most people aren't actually all that political. They weren't out there looking for this video poking fun at the First Lady, but they were looking for cute videos of the cat that flushes the toilet over and over again. And when you, as a government, go out and censor a whole site like Dailymotion or YouTube, you basically announce to your citizens, I'm a censor. I'm going to block you from seeing information that might be sensitive to the government. You actually provoke people to look for that information. In most of the world, the cute cat theory means that censoring the internet has some real implications. Right. It makes you look like a bad guy, and it keeps people away from the fun stuff.
Interesting.
The Chinese manage not to do that most of the time.
Although I was looking at a video last night of an American in China trying to use the web and displaying censorship, an example of censorship, by searching, I think the phrase was, I love knitting. There was something about knitting. And he was showing the views of his computer screen and how difficult it was to get images of knitting to come up as the Chinese censors were checking out his request. But we just have 30 seconds left. You'll be joining us one more time this month, this coming Wednesday, because next Thursday is Thanksgiving, so it'll be Wednesday. And we'll talk about the internet and international development, focusing on Africa. Any homework assignment, any other cool websites for our listeners to get primed for that discussion?
Let's take a look for next week at a site called AfricaKnows.com. It's Africa, KNOWS.com. It's a photojournalism site from Kenya, and it's going to frame our discussion next week, which is going to be about how does Africa portray itself to the wider world.
Ethan Zuckerman, a fellow of the Berkman Center for Internet Society at Harvard, also co-founder of the website Global Voices Online, as well as GeekCore, which pairs technology experts with businesses in emerging nations. Thank you for your work. Thanks for coming on with us every week. Talk to you Wednesday.
Take care, Brian. Talk to you next week.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC.